Good morning, and today what I'd like to do is share with you some data from our cropping systems where we've implemented multiple tactics to try and influence soil health. And I've highlighted a couple words, and I want to start out with a couple almost definitions. You know, when I think of synergy, I think of 1 + 1 = 3, but you know, if you look into it a little further, synergy has a variety of meanings, and it could be 1 + 1 = 0, but 1 + 1 + 1 = 3, or even 4 or 5. So there's really a lot of different types of synergy that can occur, and it's not a simple addition process. And the second one is I want to make sure everybody's familiar with emergent properties, that properties that are only evident when the entire system is examined. And I don't know if there's a... Let's see. How's that work? So they're a consequence of multiple interactions, and they're a hallmark of biological systems. And so those are, to me, the really key things about emergent properties. And what I've been thinking about a lot, and I don't know if I'm proposing it or I'm one of the ones of the people that have been thinking about it and proposing it, but I think low input systems, these are agricultural crop production systems, function in fundamentally different ways. And the way they function differently is mostly their biology functions much differently. You have different taxa there, you have different function of the taxa in terms of their efficiencies of use. There are mutualisms with other plants, with plants and insects, and then there are consortial relations which allow reactions to occur in the soil that thermodynamically otherwise wouldn't. But so I think these systems operate fundamentally different at the biological level, and these changes in biology influence these other properties, some of which may be considered emergent properties, but carbon dynamics, nutrient fluxes, and things like pest and pathogen and weed suppressiveness of your soils. So those are kind of two things, and I just want to get people thinking about these concepts. And so at our location, we're a research location, we have field plots, we look at residue, managing residue, we look at managing tillage, we look at managing cover crops either through interseeding in like corn-soybean rotation or following the fall cover cropping, usually after a small grain, and look at how this influences the soil. So the big question, everyone knows, what do you measure? And so we measure a lot, as much as we can. We measure everything we possibly can because we don't know really what's, that's kind of what emergent properties about. You don't really know what's going to pop out the other end. And so we do try and measure a lot of things, and some of these could be considered characteristics indicators, or some of them may be emergent properties. So this is our location in the northern corn belt, and the predominant cropping system in our region is corn soybean. It's tilled and it's fertilized for maximum yield. That's kind of the default. Anything else you do, you're introducing another tactic that may influence soil health and improve the productivity and the sustainability of the system. So this is the first field study I want to show you data on. This was established in 2000, and it's primarily the two-year corn-soybean rotation, only all these are no-till. So we're just starting out at a baseline with no-till. We just think, okay, we've done the tillage thing, and we're looking at a two-year rotation compared to a number of four-year rotations, and every crop is present each year. Well, we can't possibly measure everything on all those, and so I'm going to just show you some selected data where we compared a two-year rotation and a four-year corn-soybean or corn, pea, winter wheat, soybean. Those are the two rotations, 2000s, so they've been through three or four cycles, and that's the kind of data we're discussing here. So the first two, again, you start out with no-till, and these are managed with a very lean end. They're not fertilized for maximum yield, and this is over a four-year period we examined nitrous oxide emissions and found out that the four-year diversified rotations had about 20% less nitrous oxide emissions over a four-year period than the two-year period. So that's an activity measure, but also it's a property of the system that you would like to see emerge from these tactics that you're applying. And then the second thing, interesting, in the four-year rotation, and again, each crop is present each year, so this is 4 years of data. The soybean yield in this was about 20% higher than the soybean yield in the corn soybean rotation. And typically, we think of soybean helping the corn yield, but in this more diversified corn rotation, we're actually getting a boost in the soybean yield. So in the same study, we've also tracked soil organic carbon. And if you look at the experiment started in 2000 and you look at four-year periods, you can see differences in the dynamics of accrual of soil organic carbon in them. But in this last four-year period where we have a full data set from 2008 to 2012, the most conspicuous difference in the treatments was in the four-year rotation at this slightly deeper depth, 15 to 30. This is no-till system. We saw a much bigger, significant increase in soil organic carbon. Remember, these are both no-till. So this is a two-year no-till, and you're kind of holding the line on carbon loss. You're actually gaining carbon in the 0 to 15 in this treatment, but in the 15 to 30, You're not getting anything, whereas in the four-year rotation, you've got, you know, those wheat roots and everything else, and you're gaining soil organic carbon. So it's not just total carbon over a certain interval. You may have to break down the intervals, and then also the dynamics change over time, over the 16 years. It's a very, very interesting phenomenon. Our second study that I want to talk to you about, again, we start with the default of no-till, and the primary treatment is residue retention, three levels. This is corn-soybean, again, established in 2000, and then in 2005, we added a second treatment of cover crops. And so the first thing you can see is if you take away residue, this is the highest level of residue, you reduce wet aggregate stability, and you increase the highly erodible fraction. Makes sense, right? So that's good, but it's good to document these changes. But we've also looked again at the gas emissions from these and the carbon in these. And if you look at the whole system, the corn, soybean, you look at 4 years of it, and again, each crop's present each year, you don't necessarily see significant differences in the nitrous oxide emissions. You see higher ones with the residue removed, but it's particularly significant during the soybean phase, which immediately follows the corn residue removal. And so nitrous oxide emissions during the soybean phase, immediately following the removal of the corn residue, are about half what they are where the residue is removed. And these are no-till systems, and after 16 years, they're all accruing carbon. But still, if you keep the residue on there, you're going to retain more carbon than you do if you remove it, even though they're both still retaining carbon. And so now here's where we add the next factor, the cover crops. This is some data, I'm thinking 2012, this data was collected. And the cover crops were in 2005, and it took 5 to 7 years before we started seeing an effect of cover crops on the soil properties in this system. And with no cover crop, you see a decrease in the fine palm. Again, this is the fine palm in the phase immediately following residue removal in the top level, top layer, 0 to 5. You see a decrease. And with the cover crops, we only get a significant increase when you have the highest residue removal rate. So it's not linear across here, it's not simple additive, but when you remove a lot of residue, then you can see that the cover crops replace some of that carbon in the soil. And we also measured fluorescein diacetate hydrolysis on these same samples, and a slightly different pattern has emerged. Again, we see between the highest level, this is all the residue retained and all of it taken off, we see a decline in the activities based on fluorescein diacetate hydrolysis. And with the cover crop, it's actually apparent in two of these treatments where we have a significant increase with the highest level and the lowest level. And one thing that's going on here, which we have found out over the years but we didn't anticipate, is the process of chopping and baling the stover to remove it. Actually, you have less residue on the surface than this, but you have much smaller particles. You have an abundance of much smaller particles, which changes some of the dynamics, and that wasn't something we immediately appreciated when we started the study and only became apparent down the line. So then we have a third field study at the site. We start off again with a lean N. We haven't put any phosphorus on these plots for probably 10 years. And these are corn soybean. This was started in the spring 2004, and we're interseeding mixed cover crop species in between the rows, cover no cover, and I can't remember why, but we got a tillage no-till comparison too. So everything else on the property is no-till, but this one for some reason got a tillage comparison. So this is the first fall 2014. You can see the interseeded cover crop. This is spring of 2015. Give you an idea how much growth we're getting. But I also want to show you in fall 2016, this is what it looked like. It'll look a lot different than 2014. And that's because we're planting a mixture of cover crops, and of course the precipitation and temperature were different that year, and you get an entirely different dominant species and different amount of biomass. So from year to year that may change as well. And what we looked at here was the soil burst test, and this is like how Alan Franzlubers runs the test, and kind of found some interesting findings that the first year in the fall, our cover crops significantly increased the result from this test, but it didn't matter if it was no-till or till. But in the corn, it was all about tillage changing the soil burst test, and cover crops had no effect. So in 2015, this is data for substrate induced respiration and using glucose at about 1 mg per gram and 0 to 10 centimeters, 10 to 30. So you get the two depths. It's both corn, October 2015. And here we see a cover crop effect with no till at both depths, same effect, but we don't see any tillage effect. So again, we're applying different measures to try and understand how these systems are reacting to the multiple tactics that we're applying. This summer, I accomplished the burial of these PRS probes in the soils, and these are an ion exchange resin, and I did it basically June, and then we fertilized the corn, and then I did it for July. And the most important thing here is in June, when plant demand for nitrogen is pretty low, the plants are small, you have a lot of mobile nitrogen in the uncover crop treatments, whereas in the cover crop treatments, you don't. And the exact opposite is the cover crop treatment after the fertilization, after V6, when you want the plants to have a lot of nitrogen, the cover crops are providing that nitrogen. So I think that's a really important dynamic that might otherwise be overlooked. And the last illustration I want to make of some of the work we're doing is on a producer's farm, where this producer is trying every possible tactic to increase soil health on his land. And we went down there a few years back and measured the number of arbuscular mycorrhizal propagules in his soils. And we found two things. One, we found the highest level we've seen at any site in South Dakota. And where he had the fall cover cropping, it doubled. So I think this is really the recipe there for changing soil health. And the analogy that I like to think about soil health is human health as well. It's a product of lifestyle. And if you have your existing condition and you want to improve it, you can go on the latest diet and try a single tactic, but it won't get you so far. If you want to go further, you really need to change a number of aspects in your life or in your management. And, it's called lifestyle change. And that leads to this improved well-being or soil health, which we're striving to all measure. And I think that's it, and I appreciate the chance to share some of our data with you and some of my thoughts, and hope that will stimulate further conversations. Thank you.